We're talking with John DeGraff, PBS documentary filmmaker and interim coordinator of the Take Back Your Time Day initiative. I'm Paul Nelson. Well, a couple of follow-ups to that last statement that you made. First of all, what is it with Western Europe? Some would say that the union activity is stronger in Western Europe, and because they have stronger unions, they have better benefits for their workers. Does that figure in?
It certainly does play a role. Yes, unionization, the countries that have more unionization do, in general, have more free time. So that's been a part of it. I think there's also just more of a philosophical attitude about what the good things in life are. The French, who we seem to love to hate right now in our history.
I knew you were going to say the French. I knew that. But you see them sipping cafe
they believe in the time with the friends. They believe in the long dinners and the long lunches, and they haven't given them up just in this push for productivity, which we Americans seem to be so obsessed with. And, you know, if we could get a little beyond our current French hating, I think there's a lot we could learn from the things that they're doing, their 35-hour work week, their 5-6 weeks of vacation a year, for example.
You'd say a 30-hour work week would improve the quality of life tremendously.
I think a 30-hour work week would. I don't see us getting that in time very soon. But the ironic thing about all of this is that we almost had a 30-hour work week. We almost had it 70 years ago. On April 6th of this year, which is the day we will officially launch Take Back Your Time Day publicly at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., we will be marking the 70th anniversary of the date that the U.S. Senate actually passed a bill that would have made the official work week in the United States 30 hours. And I'm saying 30, not 40. 30 hours, anything more would have been overtime. That bill didn't make it to the floor of the House of Representatives because the Roosevelt administration, which originally proposed it, got cold feet and decided to use an approach of creating jobs through public spending instead of one by job sharing instead. But we almost had a 30-hour work week. And in the 1920s and 30s, labor and religious organizations were very strong in saying that working people needed time just as much as they need money. I think that's even more true today.
We see those bumper stickers, something like the weekend, the labor movement brought you the weekend or something.
People brought you the weekend.
Yeah, that's it.
Indeed they did, starting with the garment trades in New York and the Jewish garment workers who really got a Saturday because they wanted their Sabbath recognized also. And that's really was a start in that direction. And certainly the labor movement was a key player, if not the most important player, certainly one of several key players in getting us the 40-hour work week and getting us vacation and whatever benefits we have gotten.
And we look at the way that American real wages, real income, has pretty much been stagnant for the last 30 years, and we look at that for at least 25 years of that, or 23, we have the attack on unions that was really exemplified by the dismissal of the PATCO union, the air traffic controllers.
In 81, right.
And the notion that replacement workers was an okay thing. They were no longer scabs, they were replacements.
Yes. Yeah, I think that we have been affected by this kind of hostility toward organized labor in this country. I don't fully agree with the figures that say that wages have totally stagnated since 1973. Certainly they have not risen at the pace that they were rising beforehand, but I do think some of this has to do with how we measure inflation and what we look at in the package of goods. And I think one point where I would agree with some of the conservative economists is that I think that in certain ways we've overestimated the amount of inflation of goods, because there's simply no question. If you look at figures even from Juliet Shore, the leading economist who works on the shorter working hours thing, she looks at really how much our consumption has increased, for instance, since the late 60s, early 70s, and it's nearly doubled in line also with a doubling of productivity, or maybe slightly over. So we haven't gained quite as much of that. But one of the things is that people have tended to, again, put all of these gains in the form of more consuming. And part of that has come through an increase in wages. Another part of that has come through a tremendous increase in debt, in consumer debt, which is reaching an all-time high. And we have bankruptcies in this country now. More people declare personal bankruptcy in the U.S. every year than graduate from college. This has happened for the last 6 years in a row.
Yeah, and we spend more on trash bags than the economies of 90 countries. Or there was some quote like that on the website?
Yes, and
you don't know all the quotes on the website.
I don't know all the things.
Well, there is one thing that you do know about, and that's television. And you say that people would watch less TV if they worked fewer hours. Now, that on its, you know, you look at that statistic and you think that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I'll explain why it does make sense. I don't think it would happen immediately. In fact, I think in the very beginning, there might be a very small burst in increase in television viewing. But if we look around the world, we see that there is a strong correlation between working hours and TV viewing. And the correlation is this. The longer annual hours people work in a country, the more they watch television. It's almost a perfect correlation. I don't know until recently, the only modern industrial country that both worked longer hours and watched more TV than the United States was Japan. The Japanese no longer work more hours than we do, and I don't know what's happened with their TV viewing. But if you look at it, the countries with the lowest working hours, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, for example, also have the lowest TV viewing. And we have the highest. And it seems counterintuitive, but in fact, think about it a little bit. TV is a great activity when you're exhausted. You go home, you've been working this hard job, you lay in front of the set on the couch and you press the little remote. There's really nothing to do. You're just passive and you get entertained, and that's a good thing to do when you're absolutely beat from working long hours. People who have more hours and more time actually are more likely to go out and spend that time with friends, family, and activities.
More likely to have a life.
More likely to have a life, get a life.
And here you are. You produce TV documentaries.
I'm trying to put myself out of a job, but it hasn't worked yet.
I have a feeling you have a job for a long time. But and PBS is certainly not typical television. There are no there are underwriting credits, but no commercials. But 2/3 of the advertising in the world happens in the United States. So although we may be passively taking in that drug on the couch after a long day at the office, we're still getting those messages, buy this and you'll be happy,
and again, it's all kind of a vicious circle. I mean, you're more exhausted, you watch TV, you got more messages to buy, you buy more, you get more in debt, you work longer.
Isn't TV the prime cause of the epidemic of overworking, with the way they disempower folks with these messages?
Well, I don't know about the prime cause. I'm always hesitant to say here's the prime cause for things, but it certainly plays a role in this. I mean, I think, if we may talk about the lack of worker protections from unions as a prime cause, there are many. We simply don't have any legislation in this country that really protects people in terms of working hours to the degree that we see that in other countries. Other countries, most of them have real family leave policies that are not only provide 12 weeks unpaid, but actually provide paid leave for families. They also have a minimum, in most industrial countries, a minimum of 4 weeks paid vacation, and most of them get 5 or 6. We in the United States are the only modern industrial country which has no paid vacation legislation or policies whatsoever. So last year, 26% of American working people actually received no paid vacation. It's a combination of many things that lead us to where we are. Our isolation from the rest of the world, which has been a blessing in some ways, but the amount of resources that we have and things have allowed us to be very prosperous. But our isolation from the rest of the world, I think, means that we just don't see what's going on in these other countries. It's almost, I got an email from Norway. Here's an example of this, from people who said, congratulations on Take Back Your Time Day. We send a message of solidarity from your friends in Norway, from an organization called 070605. Now, there's a bizarre title if I've ever heard of. You know, Norwegians are good at a lot of things, but apparently not at creating names for organizations. But anyway, I look at this. What's this mean? Well, 070605 is actually, and they flipped the month and day around. It's actually June 7th, 2005, which is the 100th anniversary of Norway's independence from Sweden. And the goal is that by that time, Norway would be well on its way to being a fully sustainable society over the long run. And the two pillars, as they see it, of sustainability are reduced consumption and reduced work time. And they have a big campaign all over Norway about this, with ads and things, and I'm reading along, and this whole thing is sounding really neat to me. But I'm thinking, geez, what far out, marginal green group over in Norway came up with this idea? Who are these folks?
A little too much lutefisk, perhaps.
Yeah, I wondered about it. I got to the bottom of the thing. Turns out this entire campaign is fully funded by the Norwegian Environment Ministry and endorsed by the Prime Minister. I think about this and think, wow, the government is actually behind this thing, telling people to consume less, work less. So what planet? It's like we're the disconnect is incredible.
Now contrast that with the current administration, who after 9/11 said, go out in the stores and get the economy going.
Shop, yeah. The current administration, whose answer to everything is sort of shop till you drop and work till you drop. They're even saying now that, Bush's idea is that the people who've gone from welfare to workfare, the mothers, often of single mothers of children, ought to work 40 hours instead of 30 hours. Now, it would make a whole lot more sense if he suggested that we all work a little less. But for these moms, this is a tough thing, because this is the same administration that's talking about family values.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. Let me take maybe the position that would be taken by someone like our president, who might say some of the problem is not overconsumption, but overpopulation, especially by the way the growth rates in the third world. Would you say that has something to do with it? It has something to do with the problems that we're facing on the planet, running out of resources?
Well, I think we need to think about reducing population and the third world countries. I think many of them realize that they've got a problem with that, and they're working on it. And in fact, one of the things we find is that as they actually get a little better off and are able to, for instance, provide a safety net for people and for older folks, for people the sense, for instance, that they'll have some social security in old age, people tend to have smaller families. So I think the third world is conscious of that. And even so, they're consuming at so much lower rate. I mean, the average Indian is using 1/30th of what an American is. So I think we should help deal with overpopulation, but our overconsumption is a bigger threat in many ways.
Aren't people around the world entitled to the lifestyle of Americans?
They may be in some sort of philosophical notion
theoretical
of equality,
way.
Theoretical notion of equality, be entitled to it. They're not going to get it because the planet simply isn't going to sustain that. So we need to do something, some alternative. We need to start rethinking our way of life so we all can have a decent and balanced life. They need more. I mean, they really need more physical things, material things. At least a billion of the world's population clearly do, because they're in abject poverty. We need to learn how to live better with less stuff. And that, to me, doesn't mean sacrifice and self-deprivation. It means a life that can be more full, and certainly a life with more time.
And it starts with one day off in October.
It starts with taking a day or a half a day or whatever people are willing to do, and coming together in teach-ins and speak-outs and discussions to talk about this, to create a national dialogue about the whole problem of time pressure and overwork in this country. We're not saying here's the answer to this. We're not asking people to come together on October 24th and all endorse some kind of thing like a 30-hour work week. It's not that at all. It's a date in which people come and actually begin to talk about how this is affecting them, their lives, and the possibilities of alternatives and what's happening in other places. So we think this is a nonpartisan activity, the beginning of a national dialogue about something that people from family values, conservatives to strong liberals all sense that we really have a time shortage here.
And it's a Friday.
And it's a Friday, and it's 9 weeks before the end of the year, which symbolizes the 9 weeks more that we work each year than Western Europeans. So if you're a Western European and you'd worked as long as a typical American had by that date, you'd have the rest of the year off.
Yeah, that really brings the message home, doesn't it?
Well, we think so. We hope so. I mean, it's tough because I think this country is, while lots of individual surveys show people are very concerned and pressed for time, our leaders do not speak about this issue at all, either party. This is not, I'm not faulting the president for this. I hear nothing about this from the Democrats either. Ralph Nader talked about it a tiny bit in his campaign, and according to The Nation magazine, he got a better response when he talked about that issue than anything else that he talked about. We don't hear about it. We should have heard about it from Al Gore, because he writes all about it in his current book, which I think is a wonderful book. I'll endorse it. Alan Tipper Gore's Joined at the Heart, about family life in America. The whole book is about what the lack of time is just doing to our family lives. And yet Gore never talked about this issue in the campaign.
And now he's not in the White House. Maybe there's a connection.
Maybe.
TimeDay.org is the website. And let's wrap up this part of the conversation.
But
sure. It'll go on. We're talking with John DeGraff. He's a PBS documentary filmmaker and the interim coordinator of the Take Back Your Time Day initiative. That's happening on October 24th.